Well, folks, what is a crack? It's September. I'm well rested. I've got a little bit of an Irish suntan, which is basically looks like a tomato. But I'm ready to go for September, October, November, December. Interesting time in construction. Loads happening. Manufacturing through the roof. Data center construction through the roof. Healthcare, pharma. Lots of good markets. So lots to be optimistic about. As I said in my previous podcast, I think there may be a small recession, but I think construction will build themselves around that recession. I don't think we're going to be impacted. Fingers crossed. Listen, today is all about optimizing design build and design assist. Now, I'm getting Greg Williamson on. He's the guest today. I watched his presentation at Advancing Pre-Construction in Phoenix. Exceptional. Particularly around the differences between design build and design assist. He goes into great detail on what the differences are and which he prefers as well. He is currently, I'll just give you a quick intro, currently VP of Pre-Construction Services at Bond Brothers up in Boston. Really interesting guy, great background, worked with the likes of Turner, Walsh Brothers for nearly 20 years, and 15 years now with Bond Brothers. So I hope you enjoy this. Listen, if you have any questions throughout this, don't be afraid to ping me a message and also ping Greg a message. I'll put both our details in the show notes as well. Enjoy, folks, and I'll speak to you soon.
Stuck in spreadsheets? Tired of the endless loop of copying and pasting? Now imagine all your estimating workflows in one program. Beck Technology's innovative Destiny Estimator software streamlines the entire estimating process. With intuitive tools and powerful analytics, you can create accurate and reliable estimates quickly and easily. We understand the challenges pre-con teams face because we were born from construction. When you are ready to streamline your estimating effort, visit us at beck-technology.com and talk with a tech expert in a Destiny Estimator demo today.
Greg Williamson, welcome back to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Good morning.
I say welcome back because if anybody hasn't heard, Greg is the current Boston chapter. He's a part of the ASPE Boston chapter, and he's a former Northeast Regional Governor. So if anybody hasn't heard it, I actually went through a podcast talking about ASPE and the benefits of ASPE. So if you haven't heard that, I'll also put it in the show notes as well. But that's not what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about this illustrious career of yours. But before we go into that, I want to talk about what you've been doing for the last 6 days. You got something off your bucket list, Greg. Tell me about it.
Yes. Well, getting off grid and experiencing the Colorado River, rafting 180 miles of rapids from Lake Powell down to near Lake Mead. Through the Grand Canyon, it was definitely on. It's been on my bucket list since I was a kid to run the Colorado River, and it was spectacular.
Brilliant. Is it any different to a bid day on $100 million project?
Yeah, it's similar. You know, you get slammed with a few waves. You know, you're hanging on, and you know, you got to stay focused about. You know, getting through it.
It's like a three or four subs ringing in and with price variations on the cost of stuff. So it's no different really. But the thing that amazed me when we're talking about it pre-recording was 6 days. But I thought, you know what, that'd be cool pitching out at night under a tent. But little did I know that there's no tent. It's just on a bunk side of the river, just getting some sleep. I mean, surely there's animals involved and like there's a bit of danger there, no?
You know, the best part of was being from the Northeast was there were no mosquitoes.
So, very good.
But August is a really hot time to run the river. And, you know, with all the heat waves we've been having, it was pretty warm. Yeah. So, you know, they have a camping method that I'll share out there. It's like, you know, when it's 90 plus degrees and you're sleeping on your cot and, you know, you want to cool down for the evening, you walk down to the river with your towel, you soak it, and you just lay it on top of you and you let that evaporation, natural cooling, cool you off.
Ooh.
Now, that towel's dry in about an hour and a half, so you might be getting up to re-soak it again.
Wow. Did you get much sleep at night, or was it literally 2 hour kind of windows?
Depending upon, well, I will say that, you know, we were not without creature comforts. You know, the raft allowed us to tow 24 cans of our favorite beverage along with us.
Nice.
A number of us that enjoy a good bourbon brought some bottles as well to have on the side of the river to celebrate the days.
Class. Wow. It sounds magical. I it's not on my bucket list, but I wouldn't say no given the opportunity by the sounds of things.
All good.
Cool. Right. Let's get down to it. Let's get down to pre-construction, estimating the good stuff. So anybody that doesn't know Greg, I mean, he's presented and spoke at numerous events, including Advancing Pre-Construction in Phoenix this year. But you're currently the VP of Pre-Construction Services at Bond Brothers. I'll go through his background just to kind of speed things up because there's so much that we need to get into. Basically, started out your career 5 years with Turner, going through some operations roles and then into estimating. Never really turned back after getting a taste for estimating. Then Walsh Brothers, 18 plus years, and currently Bond Brothers for 14 plus years. Just working your way up. I want to ask one question just going back to the Turner 5 years. You jumped about, you did super, you did project management, project engineering, and then estimating. What made you choose or go down the estimating pre-con route? And even at then, it was like mid-80s at that stage?
What I found about estimating was it was really about solving a puzzle, you know, digging into the details. I mean, you have the rote mechanics that help you understand a project, and that's the quantity surveying and the takeoff and the development of a price. But for me, the wonder once you managed those skills was the visualization and the early ability to understand how a project went together and to identify the risks and the cost drivers on a project. For me, the exciting thing was, you know, everybody wants to get into project management. You hear it time and time again. You know, that's where everybody feels the sexiness of building projects is. For me, you know, doing the same thing on an 18-story building, second floor, third floor, lather, rinse, repeat over a course of 18 months to 24 months means you only get to look at a limited number of projects in your career. You're doing the same thing. For me, the excitement is I get to build every project up here, right? And they're constantly coming. I have new challenges, new puzzles to solve, you know, weekly. You're living with a project for a couple of weeks while you're developing an interim stage estimate for it. And for me, the exciting part was actually to really influence the design as a partner at the table with the design team and the owner. So pre-construction for me is about listening to each of the stakeholders, my design partners, what's important to them, the owners, what's important to them, and then my understanding of the subcontractor market and the subject matter experts or specialists in subcontractor that allow me to really search out and find the right partners to bring to the table to make this vision come true at the right price point.
Yeah.
So for me, the exciting part is being able to put my fingerprints on all these projects. And, you know, that's extremely satisfying.
Brilliant. And that kind of leads me nicely into your topic that you presented on in Advancing Pre-Construction in Phoenix. before we go into the topic was actually optimizing design and then build and assist, build and design assist. But before we go into that, talk to me about Advancing Pre-Construction. It's your sixth year at Advancing Pre-Con. Obviously, there was a year where it was remote. It didn't really work out. It's much more difficult. I mean, part of the Advancing Pre-Construction experience is meeting people face-to-face and shaking people's hand. Tell me about the importance of doing that on a yearly basis, and what did you get from this year?
Well, year after year, so Advancing Pre-Construction started as a technology gathering, you know, really to promote a whole bunch of the current and upcoming tech in the marketplace and review of softwares and that sort of thing. And every year I go, I look for some real pearls to take away from it. And year over year, I'm reminded that in spite of all this tech that's out there in the industry, when you gather with 800 to 1,000 of your peers and you see the energy and the dedication and that goes into each of the projects and the delivery that, and many of these presentations are people sharing their experiences. And the reason I keep coming back to the Advancing Pre-Construction Group was because in spite of the fact that many of us are competitors, that this forum was really a let the guard down. This is really a sharing of the good, the bad, the ugly, I went down this path with a particular project and here are the reasons, here's my bumps and bruises and what you should avoid in the future. So a real sharing of, and an honest sharing of those experiences amongst our peers. So that I think is invaluable. And that's what drew me after my first year as a attendee to want to get involved and to continue to ask to present. And this past year in Phoenix was actually the second year that they had asked me to be the plenary speaker. And it's a little intimidating the first time you stand up in front of four ballrooms full of people, you know, speaking to 850 of your peers to open the conference to say, you know, what has he got to say?
Well, have they say,
I love it.
I was there and you did very well. It was an incredible, event. It was my first one that I went to live and I couldn't get over the openness of everyone. I think since COVID, there's been a massive shift in mentality in the fact of if I'm in a company doing, no matter what the budgets, no matter what the revenue is, if I'm going to learn and develop and build as many projects as possible safely and within budget and within schedule, then I need to learn externally. And everybody was on the same boat and they were rolling the same way. And I saw a massive shift even from the COVID Advancing Pre-Construction. Everybody was much more open and honest about it. And that's what we need to get us moving forward. But let's dive into your topic. So optimizing design and then build and design assist as well. Give us a high level overview of why this topic, what drove you to talk about this topic, and then give us a kind of a three bullet points of what the topic was about.
Well, for me, reason to get up in the morning, right, is to not just about delivering a building or a project, but it's about the real extraordinary dynamics of a team. And that team is not only the design team and the owner and bringing your expertise to the table, but it's about bringing the expertise of those subcontractor partners that can really make a difference. They are specialists in their field. And with a lot of the current market conditions that we face, certainly those that have been developed from the supply side limitations, that's just icing on the cake for a reason to to deal with design assist or bringing those design partners on early in some fashion of selection. Prior to that, schedule, budget, and safely delivering and quality in a project, or the three tenets of a project, and schedule is always a driver. So bringing somebody on early to help the architect with detailing and development and procurement of long lead items has always been a benefit of design assist, or to have those partners on early, because you can make those critical decisions, whether that's ordering major mechanical equipment early. Right now, with all the supply side issues on electrical equipment, but really getting the detailing right, or the opportunities to deliver design intent in the envelope systems of buildings has been a real benefit to having those partnerships early on.
Brilliant. And you seeing it a lot of it with Bond Brothers right now, or Bond Building. Are you seeing that the design assist, especially the value of the subcontractors, are you seeing them buying in more? I mean, it's obviously better for them as well. If they know that they're involved in a project early on, surely they can almost forecast revenue, forecast, get backlog. Surely they're happier as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors in addition to not only the supply side, in a saturated market with a lot of demand. In the Boston area, we found when we were red hot that if you didn't partner up with a curtain wall contractor, you wouldn't go to get anybody to participate. the lead times, so that you had predictability and you could get your raw materials and your stock and into the shop, and you had your production slots accounted for. So predictability from a subcontractor point of view of their business and their development is critical. I think the biggest factor, though, it's not just the subcontractors. It has to deal with the culture of the project, and that culture starts with the insight of the owner and his willingness to trust his team, to be accountable for reasonable costs, but to know that we're delivering value by this alternative procurement method.
Brilliant, brilliant. It's amazing you say about curtain wall. I was expecting something like mechanical or switchgear on the electrical side. There you are. Curtain wall. It's the first time I heard that one during the red hot period where that was the biggest issue and the lead times. And are you seeing those ease any, Greg?
Areas of the country, some are hotter than others. Boston is still pretty hot. Even post COVID, we rebounded very quickly. The demand for skilled labor and the employment numbers for skilled labor in the contracting market right now far exceed the levels we were at when the market was red hot in 2018 before COVID. Getting subcontractors, and now I think a lot of subcontractors are cautious because they can't necessarily get all A teams. They are trying to recruit labor and get it into an aging workforce to replace skilled labor. Taking on one more job means that you might have to hire another outside foreman and people are cautious about this talk that was out there about a recession. I don't think that recession is going to happen in the construction industry.
No, as I said, construction will only build round any sort of recession that comes our way, which is a good thing. Tell me now about the design build and design assist. There was three particular things that you talked about during that that presentation and advancing pre-construction. Talk to me about the expectation meeting with the owner and the subs. What is that involved and how beneficial is it?
So the trust in the selection process, I mentioned the owners, they feel like, you know, there are owners that are out there that think everything should be, you know, fully designed and then bid and then you take the low number. But at that point, you know, you've already gone over the falls and, you know, you have your schedule may be at significant risk to getting the materials. So there has to be some checks and balances in the process for how you select those partners. And early on, a lot of that emphasis falls on us to, one, quite frankly, because of the demand that's in the marketplace, make the project attractive. So we're literally marketing the project to make sure that we can get people to show up and show up early. And then it's about pre-qualifying those that have interest. You know, do they have, you know, good financials? What is their backlog? Who are their teams that are available? So it's not just about a low price, because bringing somebody on at a schematic design level as a subcontractor partner means that there's design intent, and there may be a target budget that you need to live by within the pro forma for the owner. But then as a team, you need to focus on how do I maintain that budget and deliver that design intent. And nobody knows the nuts and bolts detail or the innovation of the detailing like the subject matter experts in each of the subcontract fields. So they bring that to the table. And once we make a selection and bring on those strategic partners, right, the accountability is checking in on price and schedule. We usually have a nuclear clause in our letters of intent to say, you know, if things don't go as planned or we've chosen the wrong partner, we reserve the right to end the contract and move on with another. But the problem is that the project has already failed in terms of schedule and ability to recover in that point. So it's really about trust in the interview and bringing the right people to the table.
Yeah, so, and it's almost trust both ways as well. I mean, the subs have got to trust you in the mm-hmm. fact that they're giving up mostly. I mean, we talk about FreeCon. They're giving up a lot of their time in the early design phase to help you, to give you information, to relay that information to the owner, which obviously makes you look good. You can talk about numbers, schematic numbers, but it's trust that goes both ways. So that three layers or the three-legged stool of the owner, the owner, the construction management firm, the contractor, and then the subcontractor, there's a lot of trust. And I think, as you say, if you go through as many projects as Bond Brothers have, then that trust must be built up over many years.
It is, and it's about making sure it's not just a subcontractor's reputation. When we are interviewing subcontractors for design assist, we want the commitments of your A team. Do we have the right project executive from the subcontractor? Do we have the right foreman that's going to be committed to driving the job? Do we have the right engineering and detailing group? And so part of this is the value proposition that we run through in the interview process as we're vetting our subcontractor partners. And we tell them when they're coming to the table that, you know, this is our expectation for your level of participation and commitment to the job. It won't be about price. I will reward subcontractors that come to the table with innovation during this interview. You know, if they see a different way to deliver, such as, you know, something that's not stick built or that can be unitized in a particular way with offsite fabrication and ultimate speed of delivery and quality to the project, then that's the energy that we want at the table as a strategic partner.
Brilliant, brilliant. And again, it's the same from an owner, I would imagine. They need energy and innovation from the contractor as well. Tell me about the importance of leveraging the engineer's knowledge, especially when it comes to installation and constructability. So the schedule, being able to get that information, it must be almost a dark science within a pre-construction team to get that information from the subs and then relay that and tell the owner the story of how it's going to be put together.
Again, I think this starts, I mentioned listening. And, when I look at design partners, I recognize that they were selected by the owner for their expertise or their vision about how to make this a really special project. So I don't want to stifle their participation with cost cutting or just, that awful term of value engineering that has just equated to a reduction in quality or, less cost. Real value management, which is a term I prefer to use, is about the understanding of those finer details where system comes to system or performance and innovation within a system to meet the objectives, but to share that knowledge openly with the design team so that they understand where the constraints of their vision are and they can innovate with that. It becomes a discussion. And I've delivered some of the most satisfying projects have been where we have this open dialogue and there's a shared vision and everybody begins to think about it. And then how do we deliver that? One project comes to mind in particular. We were doing a very sort of the vision was for a fine performing arts facility for Boston University, and it had a Presidium type of effect on the outside of the building, and it was through the partnerships of two major subcontractors that we brought on board and a dialogue there that we really pushed the limit and the efficiencies to the material. Part of that was a ultra high performance concrete lattice work that we applied to the outside of the building. And it was making sure that the architect understood the limitations of fabrication and the efficiencies of fabrication. And then he would adjust the design to listen to what was most efficient. And then we actually delivered that project under a design assist with a target value design. We got approval from the owner for a fixed budget. And then it was an iterative process of how do we keep the dialogue going with feedback on price and cost or whatever to hit that budget. And we did.
Brilliant. Again, collaboration. That's what it's mm-hmm. all about. Again, it's very difficult to get that sort of openness from the owner. Sometimes the owner says no. I need to be involved in everything. They don't give you that autonomy or that responsibility. But we're seeing more of it. We're seeing more design build. We're seeing more design assist. I mean, if Brent actually, the national director of Beck Technology, and I had the national director of Burns and McDonald on recently, and he reckons within the next 5 or 10 years, his numbers are telling him that over 25% of all non-residential projects will be design build. What has this come from COVID? Is it the owners that are pushing the design build, design assist? What do you think is the reason towards picking this over other delivery methods?
Well, I think those two terms get kicked around interchangeably, but brass tacks contract wise, there is a significant difference. So a design build is giving a design intent and then relinquishing authority in the detail of how to accomplish it. So that has, but design assist is, so with design build again, then if there's a cheaper or more efficient way to do it, then the contractor may end up with the additional profits. Mm-hmm. That design assist is a really a modification of traditional contracting where you've got these early partners on board and you're committed there. The benefit for them is they're a partner and they're on board early. The contribution that we expect from them is their subject matter expertise in helping to optimize the design. And in a lot of cases, then you're tweaking sort of the profit incentive, whether or not that's shared or who gets the savings for optimizing those budgets, whether they get returned to the owner or whatever. So there's variations in the contract language on how do you incentivize the participants. But the design assist, just because of project delivery constraints, market saturation, supply chain issues, and smart building. I mean, there's, when you think about inefficiencies, if you're asking a design team to develop a vanilla solution that has to be, have three or equal products or methods of putting something together, and there's clearly a preferred or superior product that you want to incorporate, it's not always possible with public bidding laws and depending upon the type of ownership. But in the private world, there's a lot of benefits to making your choices that support the vision for the project or the best value proposition for the project and bringing that partner on board early through some controls in the selection process and the budgeting so that it still meets the owner's pro forma, but you get the high value of all those little details, right? There's no point in the architect trying to second guess the details of interface from one material to another and to draw them only to have them all revised in the shop drawings. So if you think about lean and eliminating waste in the design process, that if you bring somebody on board early and you can take their shop drawings and make them part of the development with the design documents, you don't have to change anything. They're approved as you go and they can go right into fabrication. And then other interfacing subcontractors can reference those shop drawings and know exactly what they're going to get. So it gives you predictability as well.
So are you trying to, well, I think you're saying is design assist, you're more likely to get the product that you designed at the end of the day.
I think you're going to get the most, I think you're going to get the most efficient. You know, for instance, particular mechanical units, right? Well, when the designer goes through and you go through all the preliminary coordination for something, you don't know if it's a left-hand or a right-hand supply. You know, different manufacturers have different, and so you have to choose one. And then if somebody submits an alternative one, now your coordination all has to be adjusted and stuff might not fit and you may end up with more clashes. Yeah. If you know exactly early on which model numbers and specific pieces of equipment you are ordering, then it can go into the model and it can be fully coordinated once. You don't have to step back and re-coordinate in order to actually go and build. And I think the efficiencies with the modeling technologies that are out there now and the early clash coordination, especially in tight spaces, tight ceiling spaces, and mean that subcontractors have certainty about the elements that they're contributing to a project. And that certainty dimensionally, spatially, allows them to prefabricate large pieces of that in efficient warehouse spaces offsite and show up to the job with pieces ready to plug and play. So right. It's speed of delivery in the on site, but it's also efficiencies back in the shop. And most contractors are doing offsite fabrication now because of this predictability and coordination in the design. And that's where they're going to get the greatest efficiencies out of their fabrication. You don't have waste. You have a whole lot less clutter on the job site. You're not bringing in a ton of parts that get in everybody's way. You're tripping over them, and it produces a whole lot less wasted trash to keep the job site safe and clean.
Brilliant. And then lead times as well on equipment is basically non-existent if they're getting involved so early and you know exactly the model that you're ordering during design phase and not waiting until the first piece of ground is dug up.
Right.
Yeah. Brilliant. Greg, so let me tell you now, are you seeing more design assist when an owner comes to you as VP of pre-construction for Bond Brothers? They come in and they go, right, I've got this idea. You throw out a conceptual estimate. Are you pushing design assist or design build?
Again, I think more aligned with the design assist is the more frequent runway because of just the contractual terms. We're not asking the design team to relinquish its design role, as in design build. You know, they could just put together a pro forma of performance and turn it over to a mechanical contractor and say, okay, you design the whole thing. That would be more design build, but asking subcontractors to participate in design assist, where they're at the table, have a voice, there's a check, there's a conversation,
yeah.
And there's everybody's solving the issues together.
Yeah, collaboration. That's what we talked about. We talked about it at the beginning, openness, collaboration, and working as a team. Listen, Greg Williamson, we could go on forever here. We didn't even get on to pre-con tech and the future of pre-construction. We're going to have to leave that for another day. Again, for everyone here at the Pre-Construction Podcast, thank you very much, Greg.
Certainly. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I have experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled concentric.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Greg Williamson, VP of Pre-Construction Services at the Bond Brothers. It is question time. First question, what is your favorite project of all time?
There's been a whole bunch of challenges being involved in building the seats on top of the Green Monster at Fenway Park.
Wow, that's pretty specific. I like that. I like it. Okay, next question. What is your biggest lesson learned in construction? Was there a time when you turned around and went, wow, I wish someone had told me that 10, 5, 10, 20 years ago.
it's one of the things I keep taking away from all of these technology conferences. It's that, and something that was told to me in my first few weeks from a learned superintendent that I continue to take away and pass along. Buildings are built by people, and people will make mistakes. It's a question of what you do to cure those mistakes.
Brilliant. Love it. Great advice. Next question. What's your favorite food?
Probably Thai food.
Nice. Favorite sports team?
Red Sox.
Nice. Who's been the biggest influence in your career? So if there's been a mentor or someone that you've stumbled across in your career that you said, you know what, they helped me a lot.
Wow, there's been so many. I'd say, well, the person who brought me into ASPE was a seasoned professional and original founding member of the Boston area chapter, Bert Peluso. You know, really, really had my back. He worked for me, but, you know, I think he was doing more to groom his leader than, you know, the other way around.
Very good. Shout out to Bert. So last one, favorite eatery or pub? So you've had an anniversary, or maybe you've won a major project. Where do you bring the team to celebrate?
Drawing a blank.
Cool. Probably, you know, a Thai restaurant.
Well, Thai, good steakhouse, you know, Mexican food. You know, it's like, I just like to eat.
Very much. Very good. Greg, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, folks, I hope you got as much out of that as I did. Brilliant by Greg. I mean, thank you for his time. He also did a very good episode on ASPE, and so the American Society of Professional Estimators. If you're interested in that, it's a bonus episode of the Pre-Construction Podcast. It's actually been released today as well. Thanks for coming on and having a listen. We really do appreciate your support. As always, if you want to subscribe, it'll help us loads wherever you listen to your podcasts, and share with your peers and your colleagues. Stay tuned, folks. More amazing guests coming up. See you soon.